opportunity to welcome all of you from seemingly a nice reception. And look at your faces, you're very fresh, and everyone else. Time to work now. You're welcome. Maybe what we need to quickly do the usual thing in graduates. We start with you, Zina, and we move the desk.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Yabuya Mbula. I'm the researcher for the committee.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Faith Ndenze. I'm from communication.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Faisal Shoghi. I'm the senior manager from Auditor General of South Africa.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Umphumisa Sithibe, a manager from ACSA.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Tsego Mbembe from the Auditor General.
Ah, good
to hear. Tsego Mbembe from the Auditor General.
Good morning, my name is Anastasia Mbao from the ANC member of the committee.
I'm Shehe Mchalisen Mashish. Mr. Van Nena is a member of the committee.
Member of the committee.
This lady is Jane Mangani.
Welcome to tell you how well it's your day do what you want with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Once again, good morning, Honorable Members. Our purpose here today is basically to brief the Honorable Members on the audit outcomes for the 2018-19 financial year, so that you can prepare yourselves in terms of the budget presentation report that needs to be prepared. Also, we're going to be presenting during our capacity building training. We did indicate that we will be doing a high-level overview on the financial relationship between the Department of Social Development, the SASA, and the Post Office with regards to the grant payments to beneficiaries, how the flow of funds work, and as well as the relationship between SASA and SAPO and the administration thereof. Therefore, before we go on to the audit outcomes, I think it's important that we do that high-level overview of that presentation between the department and the SASA and the post office on the grant payments, and then that will give more context to the issue.
So,
something like that, the DSD, SASA, SAPO beneficiaries.
Linda, do we have a copy?
Okay, then Chair, then I think we won't go to this. We can always do this and establish the people. That was the issue.
Is it possible to... Because one of the copy,
yeah,
it's more useful. Is it possible whilst you are dealing with it, you get ready with the copy for the other? So let's go back to all the outcomes.
Yeah. No, thank you, Chair. I think we can get that in. Chair, I think then the main purpose of this presentation is to brief the Honourable Members on the audit outcomes, the issues that impact in the department and its entities, give certain root causes for those findings, and as well as recommendations thereof, so that the members can prepare themselves in terms of the review during this budgeting process that they need to follow through to. If I move over to page 2, that is our reputation promise of the Auditor General, in that we exist to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability and governance in the public sector through auditing. We move over then to page 3. Slide 3 is our role of the AGSA in this particular PRRR reporting process, is to assist the portfolio committee in its oversight role for the PRRR report by giving an analysis of the audit outcomes and the issues impacting on the department and its entities. If we then move over to page 5, to slide 5. Slide 5 is an important slide. It talks on the three areas that we audit. As the Auditor General, we audit three areas, namely the financial statements, the performance information that's being reported in the annual performance report, and we normally report on the compliance with legislation with regards to financial matters. On the financial statements, we look at whether the financial statements are free from material misstatements and whether they are credible. Is the financial, what they're reporting on the financial statements, accurate? So that we can give an opinion that whatever they've been reporting is accurate and credible. We then also look at the performance information. Similar to the performance information, we look at whether what they're reporting on the performance information is reliable and credible. And that whatever the information there that can be relied on, so if certain targets have been met or not met, we determine that that information is accurate or not accurate. If they reported so much in beneficiaries have been paid out, we then order to determine if that amount is accurate and can be reliable. And then with compliance with legislation, we also look at financial matters impacting, specifically compliance with the PFMA, and a lot of compliance also relates within the supply chain management legislation. So those are the three areas that we look at in terms of the annual report of the that's been presented, specifically on the financials, the performance information, and the compliance with legislation. If we move over to slide number 6, once we've done the audit on those three areas, we then give an audit opinion on the financial statements as well as the findings on the performance and the findings on the compliance with legislation. And you'll take notice there's different colors there, and that colors will flow throughout the presentation. So we all, the departments and entities, aim for an unqualified opinion, which is with no findings, which is also referred to as a clean audit. This is where, when we looked at the financial statements, we identified no misstatements in the financial statements. That means that the financial statements were credible and reliable. They were free from any material misstatements. Also, when we looked at the performance information, we had no findings there. The information that's being reported is accurate and complete, and it's useful and reliable. And with compliance with legislation, that the entity complied with all necessary legislation during their daily operations and running of the business there. So that's what is up, is to have an unqualified opinion with no findings, therefore clean audit opinion. Then the other finding we have is the so-called orangey color, is the financially unqualified opinion with findings. In this case, the financial statements are full, free with material misstatements. We could not identify any errors in those material errors which needed any adjustments or anything to those financial statements, and we were quite happy with the financials. But we could have found issues on performance information where maybe the information that was being reported was not reliable, or we could have had issues on compliance with legislation that we identified, maybe supply chain management. In that case, because the financial statements are free from material, but we find either issues on performance or compliance, we then will issue a financial unqualified opinion with findings. Then we also issue a qualified audit opinion. That's another stuff. Now, qualified audit opinion starts getting into the more worst category of opinions that we can start, or just a bad category that we start. And a qualified audit opinion on the financial statements simply means that although the financial statements are free and credible, there could be a certain area that we are not entirely satisfied. Either property, plant and equipment, or debtors, maybe it's not, we're not happy with the amounts being reported, or the information there is not accurate and complete. So then we then qualify them on that particular item. So except for everything else in the financial statement, that particular item we are not satisfied with. Therefore, we cannot place any reliance on that particular amount or certain stuff there. On a qualified opinion, we could also have issues where there could be misstatements in the performance and non-compliance, not necessarily, but qualified opinion relates mainly to the financial statements. So then we have, as you say, to get more to the right-hand side, it's an adverse opinion. And an adverse opinion is similar to a qualified opinion on the financial statement, but only in this case, it may not only be one certain, it could be many material misstatements throughout the financial statements. Therefore, because of that, we say that entire financial statements are not fairly presented, and we cannot place an opinion on those financial statements, so therefore resulting in an adverse opinion on the financial statements. And the one on the last is a disclaimer of opinion. This is where we do not express an opinion on the financial statements, as the auditee could not provide us with enough evidence for us to do our work to determine whether the amount is disclosed in the financial statements are adequate and reliable. So those are the different opinions that as auditor general we give when auditing the financial statements and the performance information and compliance with legislation. If we move over to slide 7. On slide 7, we once again just give a highlight of the different colors and what it means in the subject. And then you'll take notice that we've got different arrows. Normally the green will be where it is improved from the prior year. The yellow or the orange is more unchanged and regress. And this particular presentation is based on three, the department itself, and its two entities, the South African Social Security Agency and the National Development Agency. So all the percentages and activities is made up of those three. So depending on the subject, it will be 100%, 33% or 66% normally that we report within the subject. There's also the funds. The funds are basically dormant. And the third day it's included. We never include the funds in there. The funds are all basically, there's a clean audit opinion on the funds, and they are so minimal endowments that we never include them as part of this presentation. If we move over to slide 8, Chair, this is an important slide in terms of ensuring that we have better audit outcomes, which will impact on the lives of the citizens. And something that the AG has been giving forward for the last couple of that we try to put as much as to the department and its entities, that if they can start doing this in terms of an accountability formula, and if they start, we can move towards better audit results. And the whole stuff is, in order to have to ensure this accountability and things are happening, this, we need to, from the starting phase, to plan, to make sure that what, how we're planning the certain things, the doing of the things, who's doing it, how is the stuff there, properly guided stuff, ensuring there's a monitoring, assurance checks being done, and then acting on good the stuff, bad the stuff, things are not being done, and that will in the end the stuff there. So Chair, I'm going to give this slide a little bit more attention in that I'm going to also try to link it with the actual social grant payments as much as possible, so just to get to the stuff there. So at the planning stage, that's where we say that the entities need to spend sufficient time. A lot of time needs to be done during the planning stage and consult widely to clearly define the targets that should be achieved. When you talk of the target, if you want to then determine if you want to pay a certain amount of grants to a certain amount of beneficiaries, I clearly identify what's your target, what's your mandate, you need to want to pay 10 million beneficiaries, the different type of beneficiaries, how are you going to go about doing it? So from the planning stage, when you start at applications, there's proper planning in documents in place. Make sure that your strategic documents are aligned, the targets should be specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, time-bound. So if you say we're going to then pay a certain amount, in your technical indicator description, be clear on how those targets are going to be measurable. Is it going to be measured for every application that's processed? Is it going to be only on successful applications? How is that going to be measured in terms of numbers, percentages? You need to be clear on all that. And then also when you go into your detailed operational documents, it's clear as to who's going to be doing what the assigned roles and responsibilities for that day. Ensure that you have adequate systems in place at the planning stage to determine if we're going to do a registration on manual documents and it's going to be input onto the system, who's going to be doing that, what system is up, that the system can generate that information that can be used, and that there's proper training that you allocate during the planning stage to ensure that your staff knows exactly what needs to be done, when it needs to be done. And once the target has been identified, and should we then go towards the budget day off and how to achieve those targets. In terms of due, when you do, as you say, we'll have the different checklists that needs to be put in place when the person comes in to apply for a grant. Make sure that that checklist is completed properly, the person that's doing has got adequate guidance, and there's good internal controls in place to ensure that the entity delivers on their priorities, that the person is that is effective, efficient, and economical. In that manner, if whatever information completed, rollovers are up, reviewed, proper controls in place, that unless it can only be approved on the system for it beneficiary to be reliable for a specific grant, if all documentation has been included on the file, if all documentation that qualifies them for to be a beneficiary of the grant is there and has been signed off and reviewed. Once that, then it's clear that stuff there. With all those basic controls in place, then you should automatically be stopped before it enters onto the system. So there should be adequate controls in terms of the day. It is the responsibility of the accounting office and accounting authority, senior manager, the governance to implement and maintain effective and efficient controls, internal controls. Hence, it's crucial to ensure that your key positions are filled with credible and reliable people and with adequate competencies to make sure that the information that's being captured at different levels are accurate and complete. And stability in those key positions also will improve on audit outcomes. In terms of the supervision, you should ensure that all documentation for beneficiaries is included in file, that only valid beneficiaries are entitled to grant payments. Supervision should be strengthened on the following with regards to the payment of grants. There should be supervision on prevention of fraud and misrepresentation in applications, which is a huge problem, in terms of incorrect beneficiaries being paid. Prevention of irregular expenditure over the SRD grant, the Social Relief of Distress grant. Management of items purchased for grants, which is directly related to the SRD grant. Accuracy of the information obtained from third parties. If they're still in the subject, they've got any information, there should be proper supervision to make sure that the information obtained from the third parties is controlled. There should be proper controls over the cash payouts and the review of beneficiaries' information. And technological advancement. Very important that we're moving into a very technological area, that they keep up to date with the technical advancement, especially to make things easier in terms of ensuring that the correct beneficiary is being paid out, in terms of strengthening his biometrics and other technology issues that need to be discussed to just make life, to make the whole process much more reliable and easier. And what's the whole idea is to prevent unauthorized beneficiaries to be receiving grants. Then we move over to the checking part. That is the monitoring and assurance by the assurance providers. It's one of the most fundamental and key control is monitoring by the different assurance providers to ensure that the internal controls are adhered to, risks are properly managed, and that the outcomes that you want to are achieved. It is important that all different assurance providers understand their roles, are equipped to perform their functions, and are given the authority their role requires. With regard to the grant payments, ensure that there's proper review and supervision done by senior managers, and that the accounting officer is briefed regularly on achieving the defined targets, where the pitfalls are, so that he can fulfill his duties in terms of the PFMA and include appropriate steps to rectify the situations. Also, during his quarterly report by the department and its entities on the achievement of its targets, it will then give the minister and the portfolio committee an opportunity to look into these matters more closely and provide its oversight responsibilities. Furthermore, as SASA administers the grant payments on behalf of the Department of Social Development, the accounting officer and the senior manager management of TSC should also provide its oversight responsibility on these payments, as it is ultimately their responsibility to ensure that the grants are being paid, as the expense also sits within the books of the Department of Social Development. Then we moved over to the number 5 on the subject, the consequences, which is part of the Act. This accountability means that those performing actions or making decisions are answerable for them. So whatever decisions you make, you are answerable for, you need to be accountable and responsible. And this should also be for those that do not do their work. There should be proper consequences for those that transgress and not do their work. There should be a lack of actual poor performance. When it has been identified that information on files are missing when it comes to the grant fund, or cannot be located, or files cannot be located, then management need to identify the recourse and take adequate action against those responsible for not fulfilling their duties from the planning stage of not keeping adequate documentation on file. So if all the basic controls are implemented with regards to the social grant payment, from the initiation to the payment and the reporting thereof, and if there are adequate monitoring and supervision at all levels, and where staff are not doing their work, so the consequence management is taking place, then this will have an impact on the audit outcome, for better audit results. It will ensure that the correct beneficiaries are being paid at the right amount and the right time, which would have a significant impact on improving the lives of these beneficiaries that are dependent on the grant. Social assistance and the entire social security umbrella can bridge the gap of inequality to ensure that a better future for the most vulnerable citizens that are in need of assistance. So it's important that the department and its entities use this model of accountability to ensure that we move towards a better audit result and improve service delivery for the citizens of the country. If we move over to then slide 9. Slide 9, Chair, unfortunately gives the movement of the audit outcomes for the last 5 years. And if you look at it from the right, from 2014-15 to 2018-19, you can see there's been a nosedive, yes, on the audit outcomes. Between 2014-15 to 2016-17, We had a keen audit opinion in the Department of Social Development. And for those 3 years, keen audit outcomes with the unqualified with no findings on compliance or performance information. And we had SATA and NDA had unqualified opinions. But from 2016-17, things started changing, where SATA had a qualified audit opinion, and that continued over into 2017-18, where they continued with the unqualified opinion for SATA and the unqualified opinion for DSD and NDA. And then came this year, SATA, previously the qualified opinion was on the completeness of irregular expenditure, the expenditure thing. They've managed to correct that. So SATA has improved for the current financial year in that they managed to sort out the issues on the irregular expenditure by reversing certain of the condonement that was not in the correct and ensure that the irregular expenditure amount that they've been disclosed is complete and accurate. And but there has been a regression on the department itself. The department has then received a qualified audit opinion. And that qualified audit opinion specifically on the department is related to the payment of the social grants itself. Chair, it is, Honourable Chair, it is not a unique situation only for this year. It's an issue that we've been identified for the last couple of years with the department. It's just this year that when, because we audit on a sample basis, we find a lot of errors or we find certain things, and then when we extrapolate the amounts for the last couple of years where we found issues on this, was not more than our materiality. This year we found a little bit more misstatements, and once we extrapolated it was above our materiality, therefore receiving in a qualified audit opinion on the amount of the social grant base. So the issue is basically when we audit the social grant payment, the amount sits within the department books, but the social grant payment itself is administered by SATA. SATA does all the application, keeps the files, ensure that the files are complete, accurate, that if a person applying for a grant, all the documentation is completed, that person is a valid, has passed the means test and all those things. So we order that information is kept by SASA, but it's for the department decision, but it's administered and all that information is kept by SASA. So when we looked at this here, we identified these misstatements where there were certain files that was not provided for audit purposes. So we could not determine if that beneficiary is a valid beneficiary that should have been paid. Furthermore, we then identified when we looked at certain files that critical information on those files was not complete. Proof of income or certain ID, the subject information that was missing from, so we could not do the means test to determine if that person did get the, is entitled to the grant, to the grant payment or not. And therefore, we cannot place, because of that, we cannot place accuracy of whether each person is entitled to the grant payment and whether that amount is correct or not. And that's also the risk that with lack of biometrics and things like that, the risk of fraud in those subjects, so it is concerned. So that's the issue that, so the main stuff is that the department via SASA needs to strengthen its controls on those file requirements, need to start also looking at possibilities of digitalizing that information so that you make sure that all the information is also digitalized and it's, and it's not necessarily new applications. Because on our, when we do our auditing, when we audit from the payment, and it could be a beneficiary that's been on the system for the last 10 years, we'll go back to that file from the time they apply. So it's not necessarily new applications. So they need to go through the process to fix up all the documents. As I indicated, this is an ongoing problem for the last couple of years. It's just that it was not, when we extrapolated the error, then it was not material, but this year it is. So therefore, even the department should even get involved with SASA to ensure that whatever controls are in place, that they even provide the oversight role, because ultimately that expense lays within the department's books, and because the expense lays within the department's books, they then qualify that we cannot determine the accuracy of that amount being paid or the occurrence of that amount being paid. Honourable Chair, with regards to SASA, as we've indicated, they have improved the audit outcome. They received an unqualified opinion, but they had unfortunately findings with regards to compliance with legislation. NDA, similar to the prior years, they also received an unqualified opinion, but they had findings on performance information and findings on compliance with legislation. And I'll get into those details as we go on to the next slide. Honorable Chair, we move over to slide 10. Slide 10 is on the financial statements, the quality of the financial statements. And if you can look at the sub there, with regards to the submission of the financial statements, it's also a compliance issue that the auditors need to submit their financials by the 31st of May, the legislative deadline in terms of the PFMA. We had a reduction from the prior year in that only 67%, which is SASA, and the department managed to submit its financial statements within the legislative deadline. MDA submitted its financial statements late. And then if you move on to the sub, you'll see that submitted financial statements without errors, it's also regressed. Last year we had this department that was the only one that submitted financial statements without. This year, it's none of the entities submitted its financial statements without any errors. But the department, the error is in relation to the social grants that we've then qualified them on, whereas with SASA and NDA, we identified numerous errors on their financial statements after it was submitted for audit, which they then made adjustments. By them making the adjustments, it moved them out of a qualified audit opinion, giving them an unqualified opinion within the sub there. So therefore, the quality of submission financial statements of 67% relates to SASA and the sub, that they received unqualified only because they managed to correct those misstatements that were identified during the audit. I have discussed the qualification area of the department, in that it relates to the grants relating to the social grant that was not paid with inadequate evidence that was provided. If we move over to slide 11. Slide 11 is on the credible performance reporting. This is where our performance reports were either submitted without errors or the quality of the performance report submitted. The performance information that was submitted to us for the department and SASA was submitted without any errors. We did not identify any misstatements in those, material misstatements in those performance information. Therefore, it's been improvement from the prior year, so to 67% in DSD and SASA. NDA had numerous errors that were identified on the performance information. And the NDA performance information is similar to last year in that they continue to have issues on both usefulness and reliability of the targets. On usefulness, we could not, the variances that they have been reported could not be corroborated to any evidence that was being reported. On the reliability, we could not place actually that the targets that have been reported are accurate and complete, because there was insufficient information or the information is not complete for us to be able to determine whether that information is reliable for the National Development Agency. For the department, we audited Program 2 and Program 4, Program 2 the Social Assistance and Program 4 Welfare Services and Support. For SASA, we audited Program 2, Benefit Administration and Support. And for the National Development Agency, we audited Civil Society Organization Development, which is the biggest part of their mandate. If we move over to slide 12, Honorable Chair, this is of compliance with legislation. As you take notice, all three entities had findings on compliance with legislations which impacted their audit reports. The quality of the financial statements, as I discussed for all three entities, before DSD was qualified, the quality was not in terms of what the PFMA requires. Similar with SASA and NDA, because they had material adjustments, we also report on the non-compliance of the PFMA that material adjustments were made to financials submitted for audit, because it's the requirement in terms of the PFMA when they submit this financial statement, it should be free from material misstatements. Then the other non-compliance issues that we've identified, both on SASA and NDA, was prevention of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The requirement is that in terms of the PFMA, the accounting officer accountant should be able to ensure that he has enough preventative controls to prevent irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure from occurring. Because the same issues are reoccurring year after year, the accounting office and accounting authority did not take appropriate steps to prevent that, and therefore we report that it's continuously non-compliance to the PFMA on lack of preventative measures being taken by both SASA and NDA on preventing the irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Furthermore, the non-compliance specifically on the NDA is a lack of consequence management. What the PFMA requires, that the person that incurs or continues to incur irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure losses, there should be a process of consequence management to identify and investigate what the cause, what the root causes, what steps need to be taken against those subjects. And NDA has not taken any consequence management, no investigations, nothing as yet on those subjects. So there's a lack of consequence management being taken at the NDA. Then the other issue is the procurement and contract management. We identified a specific issue of the department where the preference payment allocation in terms of the legislation, VEEE, was not complied to. So there was a non-compliance there. And the DSD also, there was some expenditure management where there were a couple of months where the department did not pay supplies within 30 days, I think it was a month too, that they did not pay. So those were the major, the top five non-compliance areas that we've identified during this audit, which impacted on the audit report of the department and its entities. If we move over to slide 13, slide 13 gives us the drivers of the internal control, where the issues are. And you can see it's not a very, it's a lot of the red stuff there where intervention is required. And one of the areas that we are saying that the oversight responsibility needs to be improved. There's a lack of oversight, there's lack of effective leadership, policies and procedures are not, instability of vacancies in key positions, lack of reviewing, monitoring of compliance with legislation, and inadequate consequence management of poor performance and transgression are the main contribution to these audit outcomes, these poor audit outcomes that we discussed there at both SASA and DSD. DSD and SASA, the instability of vacancies at key positions, the lack of review and monitoring of compliance with legislation are the main contributors. And for the NDA, there was a lack of oversight and responsibility, HR management, not to sub, they need to ensure that it. Policies and procedures are not updated, action plans not implemented, and inadequate consequence of poor performance and transgression was the main contributor to their outcome. One of the biggest stuff is that your oversight, your leadership needs to take more responsibility when things are not going there to make sure that they are doing what they are meant to be doing. They need to start there. The further they start there is that if people are not, there should be consequences. Every year they develop action plans. They need to make that action plans a living document on the daily basis and not wait towards the financial calculator. It should be a daily stuff to make sure that that action plans that they start are implemented and somebody is reviewing that action plan. Because one of the biggest keys that start there is that they are not following up on those action plans that is up. There's a lack of the stuff there. It's just being ignored, and the slow response by senior manager is being the biggest issue that we're picking up. Therefore, continuously findings that we've identified over the years are continuously happening. Honorable Chair, if we move over to slide 14, this is the assurance provided. We evaluate the assurance provided based on the audit outcomes and our findings that we've throughout the audit. As you can see, for the senior manager, we're saying that the senior manager, that they provide limited or no assurance in that. If they were providing assurance, doing their reviews, making sure that they're monitoring properly, looking at information on both the performance, supply, and financial, then we wouldn't be having these problems. Therefore, we're saying that a lot needs to be done at the senior manager level to make sure that they're doing what they're start up. And now there's also lack of implementation of the action plans and recommendations resulting in the same findings as well. For accounting officers,
can you explain more on that?
Okay,
I'll the senior management.
Yeah, the senior. So senior managers you can say, it's part of your top leadership as well that's in charge of stuff there. And what we think that senior manager needs to be more involved to be able to review, monitor the work, give guidance, and if you take the grant payment system, there's work being done at the bottom. If there's any quite controls in place from top down in terms of roles of responsibilities. By the time it comes to senior management, he should be comfortable whatever went through. It has been done correct, review those reports and be comfortable that those reports are credible and reliable. And be more hands-on on the issues. Not wait just for the reports and then decide. Sometimes you wait for reports too late. Be more hands-on, understand what's happening. So they should be taking more responsibility in terms of...
Sleeping on duty.
I won't say sleeping on duty, but they should be more involved. That's not there. We never evaluate...
It's not for you to make that statement. But this is the sleeping on duty.
Okay, thanks. And then you say with the accounting authority, start out, you should not is that because with regards to the accounting officer at the sub, at SASA, the CEO said did not accept adequate review and said to ensure that the supply chain management issues from the prior year was resolved. I know there has been a change in the CEO in the current financial year, so that's what is up. And there's still a lack of policy or consequence management not yet been properly implemented. SAFA has an issue in terms of consequence management is that they do issue all the fruitless and irregular for investigation. But those investigations take a very long time to complete. And listen, so there's never the stuff. So you can never take action against or identify the real root causes. And when they do complete it, then the process was not followed correctly. So they've got it, therefore they have to review the whole policy, the stuff in terms of that. Yeah, so to make sure that they even comply with the requirements, the human resource requirements in terms of this stuff. A person needs to be able to give verbal evidence as well, not only written evidence, there needs to be a process, and those processes are not aligned to the human resources and stuff there, so that needs to be improved. The DSC, it relates to the key deficiencies that we reported on the social grant, as well as for the NDA, the issues that we've identified there. The executive authority, we also mark it as some assurance because there has been a change in the executive authority during the year. What we have noted is that SASA successfully migrated the social assistance payment function, which was done on behalf of SASA by previous private MCC suppliers, where they moved it out now to the South African Post Office. Mm-hmm. And was soon identified that although we found some deficiencies related to internal controls implemented by Post Office, and that service agreements were not fully complied with during this transition phase or initial phase this year, and those deficiencies needs to be improved, and the minister needs to ensure that she runs with that to make sure that all those deficiencies or weaknesses that we identified in this current financial year are being resolved, and that we can then move to a much accurate reporting in terms of that there. For internal audit function, for NDA and DSD, we accept it as providing assurance as it is an internal audit function in terms of that, and they have done adequate work. But for SASA, they were not yet fully capacitated to carry out all the planned activities for the year, so there's only some assurance, so they need to improve on that in terms of the capacitating of the internal audit department there. And for audit committee, we assess that in terms of what their responsibilities are for all the entities, they have done what they meant to have been done in terms of carrying out their duties there. Honourable Chair, then we move over to slide 16. Slide 16 is the financial health. For SASA and NDA, when we evaluated their financial statements and their financial health, we had no issues on their financial health, and it came down as a favourable result. Or DSD, if you look at the department itself, if you look at the financials, you not necessarily note that there's any serious concerns on the department. So we're not really, there's no real intervention. But because the department, they do their financial statements on a modified cash basis. Different to what SASA and NDA do, they do it in terms of scrap, which is more on a accrual basis of accounting. That means you accrue for whatever expenditure that occurred in this year that you may not have paid yet. So you accrue for it and you count for it. Where the modified cash basis, once you only make the payment, then you record it in your books. So when we do the financial help for the department, we then transfer it, or we then move it onto, if it was an accrual basis of accounting, to determine the impact thereof. And once we do that, we then pick up that the department would have then issues with regards to the current liabilities exceeding its current assets. And that normally gives you sort of a going concern, but we're not concerned that it's up there. It just that means that the department may not be able to pay its creditors as payments become due on an accrual basis, And one of its major portions is that when you take this into account, it's the issue with regards to the grant debt, the written off of the grant debt, which will have a huge significant impact on that amount there. And then we also picked up that there is a negative cash balance on certain of the reserves there that may result in question about the ultifinancial viability into question once we take that into account as well. So that's the issue, not something which is of concern, which the all got to do with managing their funds more better, and they should be better, especially with regards to the grant funds, the PMG accounts in the different entities, in the different provinces, that needs to be managed more accurately. If we move over to slide 17, slide 17 is the fruitless and wasteful expenditure for the last 2 years. And you can see the fruitless and wasteful expenditure increase from 2 million to 78 million from the subject. The major portion of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure is, I would say that the small portion is more relating to rental tenants, so where you even have certain renters where you rent and you damage them, or you did not pitch up for a certain event, or you did not take out the vehicle, late cancellation, so those are interest or penalties that may, but the biggest portion of the 78 million is in relation to services that were not delivered, and especially one specific contract. It's the payment to the previous service provider for the service fees that they set up. And during the transition phase when SASA was moving over through to SAPO, they took over the payments where they had to make direct payments to beneficiaries' bank accounts. And they made those payments for the month of January, February, March 2018. Right, so they made the payments directly into SASA, made the payments. The service provider thereafter charged them for the cash payment that they had to do, and then subsequently then billed them again for the payments of those which SASA paid directly. And we said it's not in terms of the agreement, and they should have not made the payment without going to ensure in terms of the legal, they follow the legal route, make sure that all those are in place before the payments were being made. Therefore it was regarded as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. They are in the process, they have written to that entity for the repayment of that money. That most probably will have to go through a litigation process, but that entity is not willing to pay the money. We're saying that if you had followed the proper process and not paid it for work not done in terms of the contract, you would have saved the money. Therefore, it's fruitless and wasteful expenditure and has been disclosed. Full details of it has been disclosed in the SASA annual report under note 29 on page 149 in relation to that 74 million that was paid out for services not rendered. Chair, that's on the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. That's an increase, a huge increase there on the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. On the irregular expenditure, on slide 18, you can see there's been a decrease in the irregular expenditure only for the current year. It's decreased from 517 to 118 million. Most of this irregular is non-compliant to supply chain management legislation. For all these irregular expenditure, we then also tested to see whether the goods and services were received, and we satisfied for all these that the goods and services were received and were provided. The majority of the irregular expenditure here is in relation to SASA, and most of it are caused because the payments were made on unapproved contract extensions. Those contract extensions were approved by the incorrect delegated authority and the variations, and this relates to about 147 million of the 180 million that's been reported there. Furthermore, in the prior, on the qualification on the irregular expenditure, one of the issues was that SASA wrote off, they condoned a certain amount in their financial statements, and we weren't happy with that. We said it was the incorrect authority that condoned it, so they should have not have condoned it. Then subsequent to year end, they went to National Treasury, and National Treasury agreed with them as well that they should have went to National Treasury for the condonement, and they should have not condoned it. Therefore, they had to reverse that amount as well for in the current year. So that amount is also stopped. For NDA, it's also supply chain management process of about 18 million that was not followed. Leases are continuously, they're not updating, they've gotten a lot on leases, that the process of leases that they did not follow, and that just continued. And because NDA did not do an investigation.
AG, there are two members of parliament. As soon as your job, will have to be separated. Proceed.
Thank you, the 18 million is from contracts from the previous years. Because they did not yet do any investigation or apply for condonement or write-off, that amount just increases and increases on a yearly basis. Similar with the DSE, we said the procurement process with regards to certain provisions or social relief distress that were not followed, the awarding of points and non-local contents, and that was about 14 million of that 180 million. The NDA is not subjected to any of its irregular investigations, and the delay by SASA is also impacting. Now that's the amount that was incurred in the current year. The amount that's sitting as a balance of irregular expenditure for the whole portfolio that needs to be written off, recovered, condoned, is sitting at a total of 2 billion. Of which 1.8 billion is SASA.
Can you repeat the entire narrative?
The total balance of irregular expenditure that either needs to be
to date
is coming from the prior year.
Yes.
From the prior year is around 2 billion.
Which needs to be done what?
Condoned, write off, but you first need to follow, investigate each one of them, and then go to National Treasury for condonable, depends who's got authority, it's a right of 2 billion.
Unattended to it as far as that aspect is
concerned. They could have already started an investigation, but it's still not yet finalized. Mm-hmm. So, start there. So, and then of the 2 billion... And of the 2 billion, 1.8 billion relates to SASA, and about 100 million each for the DSD and NDA that needs to be up there. And investigations must be finalized, the process of right of recoverability and condonement should be followed in order to reduce that amount of sitting on the financial statements. I know with SASA, a lot has been, they have investigated, they've also been on scope up for a lot of the issues from the past that needs to be resolved, but they need to start finalizing those and making sure that those are then removed from the financial statements or the stuff, or is it the process of recovery to start recovering those responsible for those stuff there. But that investigation needs to be completed. So if we move over to slide 19 gives us an analysis of the most common supply chain management findings compared to the prior year, and most of it is on the quotation and process and competitive bidding process not being followed. Local content requirements are still of concern. The CIDB, we picked up certain issues still on the CIDB, but not material as per se. And the subsets, so the preference points issues. So these are the more common findings with regards to the supply chain management that we have identified. We move over to slide 21. Slide 20. Is the fraud and lack of consequences. And you can see here, allegations not investigation. Investigation longer than 6 months. Allegations not properly investigated. So NDA, their irregular expenses have been occurring for the last couple of years. They've done nothing. They need to be more involved to make sure that they stop the identify where the problem, if leases are the problem. Let's start getting, as the leases are coming to an end, restart negotiating leases. We go through the process of getting proper disasters, follow the proper procurement. If you have to still continue in that building, then let's go for the deviation to the proper disaster. Let's not just extend without the disaster. So NDA needs to be doing a lot of work on their stuff. SASA, as you said, majority of the SASA is outstanding for a long time. They're doing investigations, but it's not being finalized. They need to finalize and start taking action. Those are the who incur those and assets, they need to start making sure that they will help those people responsible for those that incurred those irregular expenditures over the years. And I'm talking some of these irregular expenditures going back many years, those security contracts and things like that. So a lot of years that those have been outstanding. So that's on the fraud and consequence management. Slide 21, Chair, during our capacity building training that we've done a month ago, we did the subject with the changes in the Public Audit Act. We then included one of the stuff is to start looking, because a lot of the county officers, the county authorities, there's a slow response in adhering to our recommendations and not following that. We then, there was changes to the public code where we introduced the material irregularity and what is a material irregularity and was that a process to be followed in terms of the material, once you identify a material irregularity, the discussions with the accounting officers and accounting officers, and give them an opportunity to take binding remedial actions where there's certain recommendations then complete or recovery or for further investigation. And if you feel that there's nothing being done thereof, then issuing a certificate of death to the accounting officer, because you've given them the opportunity to correct a lot of these things with regards to the material irregularities that have been identified. So it's just extension. We have done this during our detailed presentation on the capacity building the subject. Slide 23 is part of that day. It just defines more what is the material irregularity that we look at. It's not necessarily all irregular expenditure. It's any non-compliance or contravention of legislation. Fraud, theft, or breach of fiduciary duty, which I think the most important thing is resulted or is likely to result in a material financial loss. That's what we concentrate on. So we determined the irregular expenditure. Yes, it could have been process not followed, but not to say that it was a financial loss. We'll, and that financial loss will have to be determined to determine what's the impact in it as such. And then we look at the other as we bring in this, the misuse of public resources, substantial harm to the public that's up there, and we look at that more in detail as we introduce the amendments to the Public Audit Act as we go forward into the subject. Slide 23 gives us just a high-level snapshot of the portfolio. As you can see, the clean audits are for 0%. The financial unqualified, the DSD and the SASA and NDA unqualified, the SASA is qualified. No findings of performance information, 67%, which relates to, as I indicated, TSD and SASA. Compliance with legislation, all three entities have compliance issues that we've identified, and the irregular expenditure for current year, which is just gives you a high-level overview. Honorable Chair, then it gives us to the what? So what are the main root causes that we identified for these findings? Slow response to improving the key controls. That continuously we identify issues on these stuff, and because management do not take out the stuff and do not adequately work on these stuff, the urgency thereof is not the stuff, and therefore that continuously to the stuff there. And this needs to then be improved. That slow responses, they need to take our messages seriously, put adequate action plans into place, monitor that action plan that is being implemented correctly, where things are not being done, start taking action against those people, and have proper deadlines and timelines to make sure, and not wait till end. This should be done. Some of these controls and the stuff is daily controls, not monthly, not the stuff. So those daily controls need to be implemented. Quarterly controls as well, and it needs to be clear. It should be a clearly defined document, not just a high level and the stuff there. Because who's responsible, who's not responsible. Once you can get that with the basic controls in place, then it should start more improving. And as long as the person that needs to monitor this and whoever is in charge of the subject takes accountability to make sure that those things are happening. Instability or vacancies in key positions. That's even a series of stuff that where the key positions, you should make sure that those vacancies are full. That's adequate stuff. Sometimes too many acting and he's got double duties doing his leader stuff, acting. That impact on the quality of the stuff there, and this will improve there. And then consequence management. There should be health consequences for those doing not the stuff, and that's the important stuff there. Because there's a lack of consequence management taking at MBA, people are not being held accountable, and also with SASA, the long period of finalizing those stuff there is impact on the audit outcome. thus seeing the decline in audit outcomes for the last couple of years, just getting worse. The Honourable Chair, slide 25 relates to recommendations. We've issued some recommendations to the departments and its entities that there should be appropriate, that the vacancies must be filled, which is important, that these are the key vacancies. Internal controls over compliance with that must be improved, because compliance with legislation, there is no, that needs to be improved, and your policies need to be updated to ensure that whatever changes in legislation are being updated, rolled out, and that everybody is aware of these changes in the policies or legislation that have taken place. Audit action plan must be implemented and monitored on a quarterly, daily basis. SASA needs to set its controls over the SAFO contract to ensure that paying of grants is taking place and that the contract is being adhered to. And whatever deficiencies they've identified on the contract this year between the SASA and SAFO, that that's all been resolved. So this makes the process going forward much easier to ensure in the ending that payments are occurring at the right end. The SASA pays SAFO for the work that they've done at the correct amount and that it's cost effectiveness and is equitable as such a whole contract there. And most of all, the consequence financial process must be implemented and finalized. We also decided that for the portfolio committee, which has recommended portfolio committee on its quarterly review process, just that the department and entities give an update on the filling of its vacancies, the service level contract between SASA and SAFO, and the paying of the grant, the fraud issues that's affecting the department, how they're dealing with that, what controls are they being implemented to make sure that those issues are all resolved and to get prevented fraud that's been taking place in it as such. So we need to give more detailed review on those issues to the committee. Then, Honourable Chair, slide 26, just give us some additional efforts that were introduced by the Auditor General to improve the output, to improve audit outcomes, to ensure service delivery is taking place, and there's some initiatives that were introduced as follows. We held regular engagement with accounting officers and accounting authorities. We try as much as that to have quarterly engagements with them on the key control weaknesses that we've identified. We also try to have regular engagements with the ministers to discuss these key issues affecting the audit and our control deficiencies that they said. With that, we then, previously we had a dashboard report, we've now included the status of records review. The status of records review, we go and look at their records. We can look what information is available at the beginning at the age and towards when we do the audit, then towards the last quarter, we start looking at it. So that our whole purpose is to identify weaknesses at an early stage. So it's an early warning system for them that we can give you that information so that they start putting controls to prevent anything further from the start there. So we've introduced that. And then there's other engagement that the Auditor General has had during his roadshow and oversight engagement. And then we also include capacity building for assurance providers in it. And well, the main purpose is to improve the financial and performance management of the audit outcomes in it as such for the department and its entities. Honourable Chair, that's the audit outcomes for the department and its 18 for the 2018-19 financial year. Can I take questions?
I like the promise read as follows. The Auditor General has a constitutional mandate and as a supreme audit institution exists to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability and governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence. Just before members ask this question, you know, generally, what seems to be the case here is that it's not only the department that is sleeping, even the parliament is sleeping. Mm-hmm. So it means all of us must wake up. Mm. You know, I was presenting last night in some institution on the judicial independence. I had an opportunity to look at a Canadian paper on judicial independence. just to show when politicians are credible, alert, and do their work on a regular basis. They demonstrate that from 1875 to 1982, they demonstrate that it's deliberately made difficult in promoting the independence of the cost of the judicial institutions. It's made difficult for Parliament to amend all the laws and clauses that are determining that. So when you amend, all houses must agree, and provinces must be unanimous on this. That's made it very difficult. So Parliament couldn't just wake up and dissolve the constitution. Yeah. But what is interesting, that's the point I want to draw attention to. From 1875 to 1982, there was no legal protection for the constitution, but it was never amended. Yes, although they introduced legislation to protect it, for 107 years it was not protected, but they never tempered it, although they had powers to mess it up. But they didn't. This speaks about the credibility of leadership. Because the point I'm worried about is that this mandate that you guys are doing, this new act and everything, because we're not doing our work in Parliament, you end up doing a lot of things that in a normal democracy you're not supposed to do. You incur costs, you need new capacity, new skills. You spend a lot of time doing things you're not supposed to do, because we aren't doing what we're supposed to do. So in other words, we are sleeping at work, all of us. If we say we've got the capacity to ask the department to wake up, that wake up starts with us. Colleagues, no questions? No comments? AG is very clear. I see hands. I think I want to hear what other people are going to ask first. Whatever would be, or you?
Thank you very much for a very detailed presentation and for all the input. The only question I would ask is, there were some of the inputs that were not part of the presentation as it pertains to the different entities within the DSC. If it is possible for us to get those notes in some time before. All of the comments that have it pertain to the different entities, if we could get that. I'm going to ask, we are a new committee, there is a new minister, there is a new CEO for SAFA, the NDA CEO, it's my understanding she's now for the last 3 years in the role that she's in. What would be your, I saw the recommendations that was made. We are going into budget reviews. We hear such a big amount of money, 2 billion rand, that has been wasted. And we're sitting here as a committee that needs to provide oversight in the next 5 years and who have made a commitment that it won't happen on our watch again, that we'd be so paralyzed and not hold people to account. How much of help can or assistance can we get from the Auditor General as we, as the committee, are looking at the budget reviews, obviously, and in the next year, all the different plans that the department has given us. Is it possible for us as a committee to rely on, or let's say individual members to rely on the Auditor General to come and assist us specifically when we do performance reviews of departments. That is my question. And I really want to say thank you. My heart stops at the amounts, but I'm really encouraged by the diligence with which you have presented here.
Just let's just clarify something first. Is this 2 billion irregular or wasteful?
Irregular, yeah.
That's very, very important. That's very, very important. So the two are not the same. And the concern is that the normal procedures to deal with that have not been followed. In other words, we have got no clear information on the state of corruption, on the state of whatever, unless those normal processes are followed.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I think I also, as my colleague, really want to thank you, Beth, for a very detailed and precise presentation. Chairperson, as I have said the last time when we met with AG, it is my wish that we could have an independent board that can, outside government, that can deal with our senior management and accounting officers, that could be accountable. Because whether we like it or not, I don't see us reaching any point of accountability right now. Your accountability formula is very good, but when you look at this report and you look at the last 5 years of the DFD and its entities, from planning itself, nothing has been happening. There's no planning, let alone the doing. There's no accountability, there's no monitoring. So I think this board that is independent and outside of this government will be able to help us with this. The issue of the senior management that cannot provide assurance, that are not involved in the monitoring and reviewing and giving guidance. My question would be, when we speak of key positions that are not filled, are we referring to this senior management? And I don't know if you're able to tell us how many positions in each entity, so that, as you have said in your recommendations, that as we take up your recommendations and take up the responsibility to follow the recommendations, we have the information we need on that. I will not touch the irregular expenses, because the 2 billion, I'm sure all of us here, our hearts are just sinking. It is very depressing, it is very sad. And I need to find out in page 21, or slide 21, you spoke of public bodies, where you send this information for further investigation. Who are these public bodies? Can we know who they are? Are we able to be in contact with these public bodies as a committee, as individual members? And the financial health, the concerns on the slide 16. If I was doing this presentation, I would not even use the yellow color, it would be very red. You say that in the cash management on your concerns, you say that the negative cash balance the department would therefore be unable to provide basic services when this continues, and be able to take care of their financial commitments. Now, I need to find out, when you speak of basic services, does this include salaries? What does this include? Does it include payment of those the offices, the rental, all those things? What are the basic services and the financial commitments that you see that will be compromised when this cash management issue continues? I need to also understand on slide. I'll go to slide 24 then. I'm sure some, maybe hopefully someone will pick it up. And in slide 24, you have mentioned that in the last paragraph, in the inadequate consequences for poor management and transgressions, you have spoken about the deliberate negligence and the senior management. I assume that's what you're talking about here, that they are neglecting and ignoring their duties and controlling the legislation. Now, I need to find out, I think I've asked this question the last time you were here, that the accounting officers, in the steps of your mandate, as you have clearly indicated for us here, how many certificates, what do you call them, certificates of debt, how many certificates of debt should be issued to these accounting officers? Are they playing any role, or are they just collecting the certificates and putting them wherever? How many should they get until real action is taken about them on those things? I think I will end there.
Okay.
The last is a comment that I think as the committee, we must commit to the recommendations that are made in page 25. Those three and the others that we should come up as a committee, maybe we should also sit as a committee and come up with our own recommendations as to how we are going to deal with this as a committee. So I think we should just commit as individuals as a committee that we make sure that these recommendations that you have made for us are adhered to and are done. Thank you, Chair.
Yes? Thank you, Honourable Director.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. I also would like to thank AGSA for the presentation, which is, as the colleagues have said, is very clear, and it just puts more and more stress on one. And we are also, by the look of things, supposed to have done some work that we have not done. But my questions are just for clarity, because I know that if I have questions to the department, I need to ask that tomorrow. So just for today, I just want to ask for so that I clear my mind about what I'm understanding about some of the details of the presentation. So the first one is that in the department, when the audit was being done, or not even when the audit is being done, I would like to know if there's any help that comes from the internal auditor, if it helps when the internal auditors are effective, when the time comes for the AJSA to do the work. Because I'm saying to myself, there are people that are doing internal audits, or are they doing a totally different thing, so I shouldn't even be expecting their role in making sure that the work of AGSA is more easier. And in the last, during the last presentation that was done by AGSA to us, for a number of times it was mentioned that the part that is SASRA, the investigations have been going on for years, and five of those years I'm aware of.
What's happening?
This face is too small.
I don't think this number will need to come here.
I thought you bought your chair.
Come again?
I thought you bought your chair.
Yeah, but that's true. But my chair.
Yeah.
Meaning I have to stay here until. Even if I feel like going, can I mention it?
I'll take one of myself.
I just wanted to find out about the number of years that some of the investigations have gone, how long those are. As I said, I was part of the last 5 years of the numbers, but it does sound like there's more than there's longer than that, because that will establish for me at least how sleeping on duty, as the chair said, we have been, even as the portfolio committee. And also, the page 24, the top point, where the AGSA was saying that management does not respond with the required urgency. I just want to know, what does the Auditor General do then when that happens? Or is it why we're seeing what we're seeing now in terms of the results? Because that means that at all levels of the department and its entities, there is that lack of responding with required urgency. And one is then saying, are we sitting in a situation where presentations are just made to make us believe that there's work being done when the department is and its entities come to Parliament in when there has not been work or controls being applied on an ongoing basis, which means that even as a portfolio committee, then we will need to do more than just what we have as our role to get to the bottom of what is going on, because then it means if you can't even respond to the AGSA where they come to you, how about us who just call you to come to us to present? Are we saying that we get presentations that have been microwaved just to make us believe that work is happening or not? But I know that this may not be the question for the AGSA, but
Very good.
I just want to know.
Yeah.
I also wanted to confirm the 2 billion is irregular expenditure for the entire DSD and NDT.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Honorable Abraham, I just want to say.
Absolutely shocked.
No. Let me do this counseling. See, I did introduction to psychology. It's a very, very important introduction. We have no duty to be shocked. What you did that is, once we're shocked, something else is going to come in. When AG here is tabling issues and they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our duty what we do about. AG is not here to tell us what we want to hear. AG is telling us what is there. The biggest challenge we have, we know what our job is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Rebra? So please protect your heart from being shocked. Because there's work to be done.
The 360 million that TPA is supposed to pay back, is that rejected anyway on these figures, and we is it rejected in place?
Hilda? Hilda? Look, whatever you're handling.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the AGSA report. I must say, Chairperson, you've just mentioned that can't be shocked, but we deal differently in terms of responding to shock. I'm still shocked. Shocked at the 2 billion. My daughter is in concert level research if I fall.
So he's on the alert?
Yes, he's on the alert.
I'll give up the number.
Much as we said by my colleagues, Chairperson, I'm not going to repeat questioning on that, but all I want to say, AG, you've mentioned that on fraud and irregular expense, investigations have continued. And I want, my question is, how long in terms of time frame have you given on the investigations on the fraud and investigations that she had done. Had you given it 6 months, 1 year, 8 months? Please specify. And you had given to SASA some recommendations. How much of your recommendations have been followed after you had seen that the mess is here and you recommended in terms of trying to prevent? I see that the mess was continued over 2 years after you had rectified the mistake. What did you do about it as ATSA? Secondly, I want to know, Chairperson, how, I don't know if it has to be ATSA who's going to work at this or National Treasury. What is your plan in retrieving the money that has been found to be fraudulently how I want to know how, what has it been your plan into retrieving those money, into coming back, and what has been done about the people that have been implicated on the money in terms of fraud? Well, from what we have found, what has happened to the people? Where are they? Are they still within the confines of DSC? Are we still dealing with it? Are they amongst us? What has been done? Because we keep on identifying the problem but not dealing in terms of it and saying, you have done this and this will happen to you. What have been done? And everything has been covered by my colleagues. Thank you very much.
Not AG will say, since I told you the money is lost, what did you do about it? Well, AG's question. AG, I told you the money is lost, what did you do about it? The question, the AG can ask that question back to us.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Chair, and I must thank the Auditor General for reminding us to check the accountability plan, because it's where we are missing it.
Mm-hmm.
We will listen to all these documents, but not checking the accountability, the oversight role that we're supposed to take. And then as members of this committee, we must really be honest to ourselves. It's going to be a shame when we leave this parliament and then when the young one comes in and says, oh, these people really, they were sleeping in parliament. Let's make sure, I think the parliament, I normally say the Department of Social Work doesn't have political connotation. We are servicing one constituency, all of us, we are representing this. And then we must show them that now, as we are waking up, we are following to those who have been here before, to say, let's all wake up and make sure that this accountability plan, I've been juggling around it. Then I feel there's something that we are missing. We've been brainwashed by the ninth report. I think, Chairperson, I agree with honorable members that they have spoken. Because maybe I'm a newcomer or whatever, I just want to know this, maybe this issue of checking if the receipts are there when they account is something that my mind still boggling. we check the receipt without checking even if that receipt that they are producing, it shows the impact of the work that they have done. Maybe when time goes on, I will understand why we want the receipt only, but don't feel touched the work that those receipts have produced. So I don't want to bubble you with the questions that I want to ask. I'm covered. I just wanted to address ourselves as honorable members. Thank you very much.
Augustov, did you lift your hand?
No.
Okay. Honorable Banamel.
Sorry, Chairperson, I'm very sorry also to the office of the AG. I was actually at the Home Affairs presentation.
That's
where,
unfair.
Okay, but I still need to apologize. Because otherwise it looks like I came to work late, you know? So really, even if you check the cameras, you'll see me there by your other colleagues. No, Chairperson, I think, and then I'm sorry as well if the questions have already been asked, but you see, my biggest problem with these, and it's as much our fault as our colleagues have said, but I do feel that even though you've got an expanded mandate currently, which gives you more power, the Auditor General still remains as toothless sometimes as Parliament. And I say this because even in my other portfolio committees, we find that often each year there's very little chance that you find a presentation where there's been improvement. Most of the time, it's either things have not changed, implementation, you know, the recommendations have not been implemented. So really my question is, as much as we as Parliament have to do our bit in driving oversight, implementation, change, what can the Auditor General do differently? I see now that since you've got a change mandate, you can issue a debt certificate. Will you be issuing a debt certificate? It's called a certificate of debt. Certificate of
debt.
Well, maybe Sasa is dead, but I mean, the fact of the matter is, you can now, you've got now powers where if there's money missing, you can issue an investigation and you can issue a certificate to recover that money. So will that be in the cards going forward in terms of PSD and Sasa, etc.? But also, what we get with most of the departments, and you flag it in all the reports, is vacancies. That this instability in departments are because of key vacancies. Yet, in most departments, we find that these vacancies have been frozen. So again, if we're highlighting an issue, we're highlighting the problem, we're pointing to it, but we don't have a solution for it. So in most departments, we say that the challenges are because of the vacancies, yet Treasury has put a moratorium on employing new people. So how do we overcome that challenge then? Because in most instances, the key vacancies are the problem, but there's no money to fill those posts.
I'm going to give myself the task to protect the Auditor General.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you must allow me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the weakness of our oversight colleagues is exposing independent institutions, because they end up doing things and they will continue to do some other thing you're asking them to do at the cost of their credibility,
mm-hmm.
of their independence. Mm-hmm. The challenge we're faced here is that this committee has got to up the ante,
yeah.
in terms of oversight,
yeah.
so that you do not make Auditor General do the work of the
yeah.
department. Auditor General is like court. The court says Bondi is convicted of crime.
Mm.
After that, you know what the judge does? He takes his briefcase and goes home. It's the duty of somebody else to take that criminal to jail,
mm-hmm.
to deal with that criminal. Because the day the judge starts carrying people to jail physically,
mm-hmm.
the credibility of the judge is gone.
Mm-hmm.
That vital independence, which is key for confidence, it's gone. Because you want them now to make views about operational areas when they are not working. They have done their work. They have shown you, here are thieves. What are you doing?
Catch them.
What are you doing there? You have a job on NGO, so I'm going to protect the NGO. We have work to do. But Eddie, what I'm curious about further is your statement in slide 14. Under assurance provision. If you go down to the second level there, you seem to be saying the second level is trying. It's trying. Special audit committee, almost 100%, they do what they're supposed to do. But how do you reconcile that with the nose diving in slide 9? If those at second level who are doing their work are doing it, how is that not assisting leadership in the same slide, in slide 14, how is it not assisting the first level? Remember, on the first level you are saying in the assurance provision, they are not doing what they are supposed to do. They are not providing leadership, they are not guiding, they are not there to make sure that things are happening. But second level gives them a platform so that they have got a basis to do things they are supposed to do. How do you explain that that contradiction? Because they are not doing it, but those who are there to give them information to do things are there. So I find that very, very, very interesting. So that you can actually let us understand that. What I wanted to say, colleagues, before the OEG reports, I want to say to the researcher and the Cornell advisor, having gone through the agent's report, they have got a lot of work to do in terms of preparing the committee to interact with the department. There's a lot of questions that the department is supposed to answer. Basic things, you see, are like the audit action plan. You know the audit action plan? All what the audit action plan does, it says, here are the findings of the AG. It's not the action plan of the auditor, but it says, here are the findings of the AG. These are the gaps. Table before the portfolio committee. What is your plan to deal with this? And then speak on the department on regular basis and escalate if we have to when they don't deliver what they are supposed to do. That fear is in our own space. It means you guys go deeper into this and extract all the areas where the department in a structured way is supposed to explain to this committee why are things. You hear on the recommendations what the AG is saying, the root causes, what the AG is saying, the department is supposed to report on those issues. But if you go to those, slide what? The root causes? Slide
24.
Look at those root causes. Slow or no response to improve in key controls. That's what they are hired for. That's what they are paid for. This is not a request, by the way. You're asking them to do what they are employed for. That's what they're paid for, this guy. Inability or vacancy in key positions. Again, that's what they are hired for. Inadequate consequences. That's what they are hired for. That's why they're paid. They're paid to do this thing. Now, this is what's here. These are root causes. Well, you need to prepare something so the department can explain to us, one, why are these things not being resolved? Two, what is their plan to resolve them? And we're going to stick on them until it's sorted out. So we have duty. That's what we're paid for, if you know what's that. When we stick on them, that's what we're being paid for. We're paid for doing that. They must, I apologize to them, because we're going to do our work for which we're being paid. So they have to clarify that. You go there under recommendations.
listen to this. Appropriate action must be taken to ensure that vacancies, internal controls is a repetition of that. But I'm saying, for example, everything you have written here is under audit action plans. All the recommendations are under audit action plan. Once the AG has spoken, what are the gaps, what is the duty of the department, they must tell us what they are going to do. Right? I mean, it's sickening. It's an insult. It's an insult that 2 billion normal processes are written for. Remember, in that 2 billion, it's not always corruption. But they must demonstrate that. Now, the suspicion you have, the fact that it has not been done, it has not been dealt with, you suspect that corruption is being hidden. Well, what is the motivation for them not? Because when there's an irregular expenditure, what you're supposed to do? You're supposed to investigate what is the root cause of that irregularity. They made 300 million. They were supposed to buy a chair. The chair exists. The only thing that was not there, the processes were not shown. That's a different issue. That's why you deal with condolment. But 100 million. It was supposed to buy a chair, the chair is not there. It's corruption. If you look, colleagues, if you look, the AG says, on the investigation, there's a lot of investigations which are getting nowhere. But you get a green light for investigating, but the investigations are not getting anywhere. They are either messy or they are being concluded. You may find that even those investigations is a deliberate delaying technique. Leave me alone, I'm investigating. But you know you're not going to get anywhere. All I'm saying here, you guys have got work. If you used to sleep, tonight you can't sleep. Because tomorrow, this is a tool for effective engagement with the annual report tomorrow. Because this, am I correct, AG? These are the outcomes of the annual report we're dealing with tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So you want the truth, right? When you go to a reliable and a credible information, in as far as the predetermined objectives are concerned, all what that aspect says is that, you remember we were trying to work with the department on the results-based management. We are trying to deal with that issue of the credible and reliable performance information, right? Because if you want to reduce the cost of risk management, that thing must improve, right? Your misstatement in financial material misstatements, your compliance to the law. All I'm saying is that our good minister, who seems to be taking her work with seriousness, she must accept that she's a successor in daddy. We're not going to look for somebody else to deal with this thing. Unfortunately, as a successor in that, you must sort out the mess. That's it. Right. But AG, but the DG must explain to us how this thing happened under his leadership. What is he doing? Remember NDA? We were worried about it. But look at the leadership that is there in NDA. But when we support them, they smile and they get excited and they think we are wonderful. But look at what they are doing. Look at what they are doing. Somebody can say, are you worth looking after more money? When the little that has gone your way, this is how you have handled it. So generally, I'm saying you and Kylie, you've got work to do. Tell your families tonight. They must know you will be in your study rooms, in your houses, not somewhere where you're supposed to go, so that we've got the information we want. That's how we're going to deal with this. You've got more work, guys. In other words, you can even look at your research that you did and check to what extent is it aligned with what is being produced. Asia, you will be protected. Tell us where it is, take your jacket and go home. But all I wanted to do, maybe to clarify something, colleagues, is that the certificate has not yet started. It's starting now. That's it. It's going to start
now that that's going to be. It's going to start now. It's going to resume. We will tell them at what point it's going to start. And then the public bodies, it means your MPA, your SIU, and all those things. Yes?
No, I'm just saying that now you're answering all the
questions. No, but this question, you know, when you're a chair, you are also the custodian of the information. This question was raised in the last meeting. It was answered. So as a chair, you must be a custodian of the information that the AG deposits in the committee. But these questions are yours. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, I'll answer Mr. One and just remind you that and my colleague will assist me if I'm a certain one too. The with regards to the examples, more details in terms of the slides, we'll give them more details and we'll send that through to the honourable members and there will be more information there on. With regards to the issue, the big amount of the 2 billion, the oversight for the next 5 years and how I think one of the big issues is that the committee needs to understand the nature of the irregular expenditure, especially within the SASA. The SASA is a major portion of that irregular expenditure. They should, my supposition is they should brief the committee in terms of the details, the big irregular expenditure, when it occurred, how long it's been in the subday, what's the process, and what's the delay in the finalizing, and the subday. And why I'm going to say this is the audit committee for the last rest actually went into detail in the irregular expenditure. That's one of the reasons of them moving out of the qualified opinion on the irregular expenditure, is that they work closely with the staff to look into the details of the irregular expenditure. So SASA has got all the information that's up. Yes, the consequence management process has not yet taken place, the delays in finalizing that's still impacting. But I think once the staff can see, it can take notice that lots of these irregular expenditure could have happened 4 or 5 years, big amounts ago. That relates to the CPS, that relates to versus in the South Bay, the security contract that was signed a couple of years ago. And once the committee members understand the nature of that irregular expenditure, it will help them improve in terms of their disaster from that day. So I would suggest that to get more details from SASA in relation to. With DFT of their 100 million, a major portion of that 100 million relates to the social relief or distress. That's when there's floods or certain things and they have to follow immediately. You need to go and provide blankets, you need to provide. And that is administered by SASA on their behalf. And SASA does not get approval in terms of the legislation, go and do that. So therefore, non-compliance, but because the expenditure sits within the department, it's then irregular. But SASA is part of their responsibility to make sure that they follow those before they supply those, provide those goods on an emergency basis. And all they need is just get a proper approval. So we say, it's an emergency, yes, it's agreed. It's an emergency that needs to be happened, you need to provide, just get a quick approval from whoever the necessary authority is, and make sure that whatever you're doing is effectiveness and it starts there. As I said, in terms of the assistance from the rely on the review, is that as the AGSA, wherever we can assist the portfolio committee in terms of our service to provide information or in the subject, I think we open for it. If there's any specific clarification needed, whatever it is, through the secretary or whatever it is, we will assist where we can in terms of whatever clarity is needed or any presentation may be given that we can then assist the members. Like we've done the capacity building, if there's any specific, then we always just have a request and then we can consider whatever it may be as long as we have stuff. One of the stuff there that in terms of the processes being followed and how can you improve and whatever it is, and with SASA, why these things continuously happen in terms of accountability, in terms of whatever it is that you take a normal public entity. A normal public entity, you have the CEO at the top, and then you have a board, non-executive members that oversees everything. For the SASA, the CEO is the accounting authority. And that is something that was probably needs to be, we'll look out to consider discussions with the minister, because the amount of money that they do, the act puts the CEO at the board, the amount of money that SASA goes through, it's in normal terms of good governance, is the consideration that most probably one of the stuff to help improve is to have an independent board to overlook the stuff there. That would assist in the stuff there. It's my opinion on the matter. I know the previous minister was even looking in that regard to start looking at changing the legislation to have a board, an accounting authority board, to overlook the stuff after the stuff there and most probably change the legislation. Senior management, accounting officers that could be accountable. Yeah, from planning the stuff, our biggest concern in terms of accountability at the senior manager and the accounting officers is the basics that they need not be doing. They're not holding people accountable. Senior managers are not, as I said, in this, not doing what they meant to be done. And there's no planning, there's no monitoring being done, so my stuff on the senior manager's assurance level is that yes, the scene, they've come here, they've got the plans, they've got the stuff, it's the implementation of that day. It's how well are they implementing and who's making sure that it's been done at correct level. Yes, they've been reporting, they've been saying, we've got all these, we've got the good plans. But how well is that plan being implemented? What wrong has been done? These are the issues that needs to be concerned there. It goes down to your key positions not being filled. Your senior manager assurance level, key position. Yes, it's a senior manager position. It's not, and what we decide, if you take for SASA, your regional executive managers, a lot of them change very often. A lot of them are in active positions. At the same time, they acting in that position, they even doing their previous work, so there's just too much, and that impacts on them fulfilling their duties. Mm-hmm. If you have one regional executive member that's teaming with certain ideas, not 6 months, he's been changed to somebody else. So there's no continuous flow. So therefore we're saying, although yes, there may be a moratorium and all those on the vacancies, it's key in idea in making sure, and it's not our subject, which is identified as a root cause, that if you get people in the right position, that's credible to doing the right work, it should then improve. Mm. And as such there. Yeah. Yes, the Honourable Chair, with regards to the public bodies and who we will start there, as you rightly said, we remember the Public Audit Act, the amendment got approved beginning of the financial year, and during the certain audits that we already went through this process where we started looking at it. Come next year, we'll look at more audits, so these audits will then start slow. So we'll start looking first on, there's a process to follow, not that we will be just set up, we need to determine.
I was referring to this full member.
Yeah.
When I said
that,
members
are the ones who said that. Yeah, we'll see. Okay. Thanks, Chair. So what we will do, we will first start looking at the non-compliance, what's related to irregular, whatever the stuff there, where is the stuff for the current financial year, we will be doing it, and then determine if that will result in a material irregularity, which resulted in a financial loss. Once we, and if we do identify any of those, we will then start the process of communication with the current CEO, the accounting day of SASA or the DG, to say this is what is identified. We'll give them a chance to respond to that day, and once we respond, we'll then give them certain recommendations or look at what recommendations they will do. We will then monitor. If in the ending we feel that there's nothing being done or we've given you, then we've got a chance to either submit that thing to the Hawks, SIU, or the Public Prosecutor for further investigation, and then they will be doing it in terms of their, once we submit it to them for further, in terms of their legislation and their mandate, they will be doing that. If we satisfy that there is a financial loss and we're happy and the accounting officer is not doing what to do, then we will move towards the process of issuing a certificate of debt. So yes, we have not yet issued any certificate of debt. As I said, it's a new process. For the current financial year, those audits that we have started the process, most of whatever has been done or recommendations or whatever it is included in their respective annual report for this current financial year as to where they are in the process or what they have done or any recommendation, it's included in the stuff. So going forward, this will be a more concentrated and a small detail. With regards to the financial health, yes, in terms of the financial health, The commitment that we've established is the financial commitment, yes, that covers all the stuff. It could have impact on any officer responsibility, be it administration, be it the stuff there, to provide the basic services, that if they don't manage it properly because we're the stuff there. So at the moment we don't the stuff there, but because you start seeing accrual basis in accounting and if you have to go there, it will then show you the stuff. So currently, as the cash is going out, but if you start looking at it, so, but that financial commitment is there, commitment in terms of any expenditure that they may be liable for. Inadequate consequence management, slide 24, yeah, that we discussed, it was the certificate of debt should be issued, and when we'll issue the certificate of debt, the certificate how many? At the moment, I don't think so. As we just started with the process for government, for those that don't think so, there was any certificate of
debt. It is a certificate of debt of conscience.
Has been issued as yet. So I don't think so. Any has been issued in government for this current financial year. But I think by the time we come to the process of issuing this, we would have followed a long process to make sure, when we come to that, as an accounting officer, we've given you enough time to rectify, to do it, and you've done nothing. So now we're holding you accountable and that stuff. So it'll be a long process before we get to that stuff there. Committee recommendations, yes, we agree that you can have a look at those recommendations and can start there on the recommendations, and I appreciate the members to looking for more recommendations in order to improve these audit outcomes and et cetera, and to improve in terms of your responsibility. What regards to the internal audit department, audit being done, the internal auditors, are they effective? The internal audit work, I'm going to look at the department and Southside itself, the internal audit work differs from the work that we do. What a lot of their work is on controls based to ensure that there's proper controls. Internal audit, like us, they do find a lot of findings. They're finding similar to the action plan, and it's that implementation and it's not being the stuff. Therefore, those control weaknesses are the stuff. Part of the audit committee's responsibility is to overlook at these internal control reports and take the department of action. And they do the stuff, but it goes back to the slow response by management to effectively implement internal audit the stuff there. Because if internal audit recommendations are continuously being improved, the stuff, once your controls are right and you get that, it just will move to a better audit outcome. So it starts from the action plans of the internal audits. Are they being adhered to? And that's where we are. Therefore, we cannot place reliance on the internal audit because we know that those controls that they're effective are still not being implemented. So we go for more full substantive tests. We cannot rely on controls, because based on what audit, the internal audit has identified. And then within SASA, one of the internal problems is they've got the nice plan, but they have problems within the vacancies within the internal audit, which needs to be improved. Because if internal audit is doing their work, identifying the weaknesses, and that is being corrected, it makes the AGSA like much more the stuff, because then we know things are being done. So that's where the stuff is slow response is starting from the internal audit report that's not being adhered to. Yes, with regards to the investigation, those investigations are for a number of years. I cannot give their precise, but the majority of that 1.8 billion of SASA could be within the last 5 years, from the time in 2013-14. Those were the majority of that day. As I said, once you get the analysis of the irregular expenditure, the details, and make up there, because there's some big amounts in there. The security contract makes up a couple hundred million. You'll see when it started. So, you know, and those that could give you an idea in terms of those investigations. Slow responses, yes, we agree that in terms of this, all what we do is we report to management. We bring them as much as possible to the minister so that they can start taking action against the subway. And I think it's just a mindset change within the management of structure to follow up on if things are not being done. And helping those people, that's what it is. That's what it is about. And follow up to say, we've given you that deadline, this has not been done. Why? These investigations are taking a long time. Yes, investigation in terms of our policy should be 6 months. Why is it long, Mr. Sir? Who is the thing? And that's it. If your policies were not aligned properly when you did investigations, and when the person went on to the CCMA or you've taken and you realize that, why is it taking so long to change the policy? That's what the accounting officer said it should be. I was responsible to say, this thing, the human resources should be subdued. Because the question is that if you want to prevent what people need, you need to start showing those and helping those people responsible. You cannot just update. You've got investigations on irregular expenditure, been outstanding for a long time. You know the problem. You've identified people that are responsible, but nothing has been done. The question is why? There's the people left, what is it? And at the same time, even if you identify, what controls have you done to stop it from occurring? And that should come out even when they do the irregular expenditure. That, okay, yes, people may have left or you never does a certain thing, but what controls have you done to stop these from happening? What was the root cause? And that becomes very important in terms of the day.
You want to come to the next presentation?
Yeah, I'm going to wrap up now. The 360 million payback by CCS, yes, it is reflected in the financials. It's reflected in two areas. You won't specifically see it under irregular expenditure because it's part of the opening balance. Part of the 2 billion opening balance is coming from the previous year, so it's already included in the sub, as well as on our contingency note. On the contingency note, note 25 on page 146 of the annual report, they've got full details of the 316 million where it is up there. I think I've covered that. Yeah, it's on the SASA annual report on page 146, sorry, on contingencies and the
Don't go over generous.
In terms of the fraud and money and getting back to the money and things like that, I think this point is even another issue. You'll take the amount within DSD. Your debtors have been so high and the write-offs of those debtors, and a lot of that is fraudulent debtors from the past and of fraudulent beneficiaries being paid. In a lot of these instances from the past, not now, but in the current structure, it's where they cannot even recover because the person that was incorrectly got that grant doesn't have the means to pay back. But there is other instances where if you take the syndicates and all this fraud that's happening, they need to have the investigation, they need to as much possible to then recover those money through SAPs or whatever processes or legislation are there. Because in many cases, they're just criminals that are getting, not people that are desperate in terms of the need of that money, where they're out there. In some instances from the past where we identified was certain people have benefited from it but were in need of that money. And in those cases, then you go to the writer. But this fraud issue that with cards or fraudulently issued and things like that, they need to finalize those investigations with SAPO. And those people that held responsible should be then messed up. And there's investigations. And I know it's a huge concern because it's a
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
See, I think I covered most of it.
No, a number of issues AG you are raising, I think the committee is supposed to look at it. And I want the committee to be conscious of its work. A lot of these things, follow up, investigation, what has been done, the committee must do that work.
But what was the next thing?
I wasn't attacking them earlier. I was saying they've got extra teeth now to buy. As much as we've got it, hold the department to account.
Makes your mouth look ugly.
Yeah. They have properties because they're not doing their work. They have got more teeth in their gums. It makes them not look good.
No, but I also said that
I'll tell you. No, don't make
but what has been lacking is time frames. We always say that we're going to hold them to account, but then we don't have proper time frames to look at what should be done.
Okay.
I'm just saying I wasn't
attacking. No, I understand you. I would have told you if you are taking them. You know I protect AG. All I'm saying is that
You must not even be happy about the extra fee. I think the leaders must not be excited about a need to put extra fees for the nation. I'm serious, you know, if you know extra fees, how do they look? They don't need to look good. When you put your normal fees and you put another fee and another fee. Look bad. Okay? Next question.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I'll give over to my colleague, Mette. She'll be running through the next.
Thank you,
Chair.
I've been with Sora for many years. This one. Young father. Mette, we are in your hands.
Thank you, Chair.
Colleague, I want us to listen very carefully. This is an information for being educated, clarified about things we need to understand. For you,
thank you.
You got the presentation, am I right?
Yes.
Follow me.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. There is a client satisfaction questionnaire that was circulated, and we'd appreciate if after the presentation the members could complete it, and then we'll have it. Yeah, we'll collect it. It looks like. The following presentation is about the grant money flow, which the portfolio committee requested that we enlighten them on the process followed in terms of distributing the funds to the beneficiaries. I need to start with verification of promise. The Auditor General of South Africa has a constitutional mandate, and as the Supreme Audit Institution of South Africa exists to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence. Our role is to reflect on the year under review and be able to assist the portfolio committee to exercise its oversight role. Right. Depicted in this diagram is a flow chart of the grant fund. It flows from the bottom up. It depicts how the funds are allocated as a vote from National Treasury to DSD, and then upon request by SASSA from DSD, it would then be distributed through BankServ to SAPO, and then also to bank beneficiaries directly into their bank account. I will elaborate more into the coming slides. DSD has 10 social service fee accounts. They are PNG accounts that are held with the South African Reserve Bank. There is one national account, and then there is 9 provincial accounts. DSD would then report on the payment of funds, the expenditure being consistent with DSD, and the administration with SASSA. So SASSA has access, full access to the account, the provincial PMG account. SASSA then reports on the administration process thereof. The Social Service Act of 2004 provides a framework for the provision of the different types of social grants and social relief of distress, amongst others. SASSA transacts on behalf of DSD through these 9 provincial PMG accounts. And if there are any funds that are left in the accounts at the end of the month, they would then be topped up with for the coming or the next month based on the expected number of beneficiaries that need to be paid. Right, SAPO manages beneficiary information, and SAPO
is a service provider, like they used to have with TTS. So in this case, they're using SAPO as an intergovernmental agreement. They have what we call the master agreement, which then governs the whole process. SASA uses SOCPEN to register beneficiaries. So the registration would be done at the SAPO branches, and also some of the SASA local offices are used by SAPO for the process. And then they would then provide SASA with the information, which would then be loaded on SOCPEN. So that would be all the eligible beneficiaries. And the movement would be on a monthly basis as people are being registered as we go. And then the SOCPEN report would then be taken as a payment file and sent to BankServe to request payments to be made into the individual's special disbursement accounts, which are then managed by SAPO. The system that they use is called IGPS. And it is this system that basically would inform SASA as to how many people were paid through which channel of payment. And that is what would then direct SASA to say how much of the social service fee should be paid to SAPO in that regard. So SASA uses SOCPEN, and once the payment instruction has been provided, SASA then needs to hand over the file to BankServe. The file would then have in it the names of the beneficiaries, the ID numbers and the amount, as well as the province in which the beneficiary is. The payment instructions are usually generated over weekend, as there is less activity on the system during that time in order to maximize the feed and the of data processing. And once the payment instruction has been made, then the amount will then be effected into the beneficiary, either the beneficiary bank account or the special disbursement account held with SAPO. Right, so SAPO basically uses two methods. So they have BankServe as a supplier, that's where the beneficiaries then have their own bank accounts with the commercial bank, the likes of APSA, Standard Bank, or even a fancy account with SAPO. And then on the other hand, they have the master agreement, which I've spoken to, which then has the three different channels of payment, where beneficiaries can either get their money at a cash pay point, which attracts a service fee of 51 rand, or at over the counter at a SAPO branch, which attracts a service fee of 23 rand, or using the national payment system, which is basically your retail pay points at ShopRite, Pick and Pay, or you go to an ATM, which then attracts a service fee of 13 rand.
Okay,
can you repeat that for us, please? Can you repeat that for us? Okay. Of each one. Okay, so directly into the bank account of beneficiaries is 1 rand. It attracts a bank charge of 1 rand, which is through a bank set.
That 1 rand? SASA paid directly
to BankServe.
To BankServe.
Into their bank account. So that's the cheapest mode. And then with the SAPO one, then we have three channels. The first one is the cash payment, cash pay point, which attracts 51 rand. This is where you go to maybe a town hall, and then there will be those affiliated items that deliver the cash.
Okay.
And then the second one is over the counter at a SAPO branch. This one attracts 23 rand. Then the third one is using the national... The third one is through the national payment system. That's your ShopRite, ATM, and the like. So each beneficiary then gets to decide. The money is loaded into their card as the special disbursement account that is managed by SAPO. Then each beneficiary decides where to go. Then at the end of the month, SAPO will then pull a report through IGPS to say who went where, and that is how they're supposed to then know how much should be charged. And those, that's one of the challenges that we had during the current year under review. The reconciliations were not done on a monthly basis, and only towards the end of the year were they trying to work on them, and there were some differences. And I think the portfolio committee can actually request SASA to elaborate more on that matter. There were a lot of issues around that.
Sorry, Chair. I think what Mr. is saying is quite the task for the committee to look into this, because this affects the payment to the beneficiary, and we need to look at cost effectiveness as well.
Absolutely.
And if you look at the SASA's financial statement for this year, there's been a huge saving compared to what they paid TPS previously. There's been a huge saving because this is much more stuff. But I know they have had challenges during the past. They're still renegotiating because they're understanding the behavior of beneficiaries. And when they sign it, they're understanding those behaviors. So they are going to, but what they need to keep in mind in this whole thing to ensure the cost effectiveness, even if they give it to SAPO or whatever they pay, it doesn't, in the ending, that money the state is going to help benefit the beneficiaries, more money will be available. So they need to keep that in mind. So they go into the negotiation process with SAPO and SASA, and I think they need to clear it up there. And the committee should be even involved in during the committee as to what the agreements and what it is, so that your opinion provide your necessary oversight role in that regard.
Right,
Mr.
Sorry,
Mr.
Can we hold our questions?
Absolutely.
Just hold our questions. Write them down. Give you a space and ask them until 12 midnight.
Right, so in an instance where there were unsuccessful transactions, Bankstamp would then draw a report and send it to SASA, and then all the monies that were not successfully transferred into the bank account would be returned to SASA. All right, so the money basically comes from Treasury into DSD, from DSD to SASA upon request based on the number of beneficiaries and the amount to be paid. And then the two options where either it's paid into the beneficiary's bank account directly, where they get it through the ATM, or through post office with the three channels of payment, the cash paper, through the cash PayPoint, over the counter, or using the national payment system. And yeah, as I've highlighted, the biggest challenge was the reconciliation. So it was difficult for SASA to determine how much they should have paid. Initially, SASA went ahead and paid without the reconciliations, and the reconciliations came later. So it was a whole process of working on those, and that also delayed the audit process a bit, and that is why we signed post-July. And I think it would be interesting for SASA to explain more on the challenges between themselves and SAPO and the communication and all the disputes that were then experienced during the period. So from our side, that's it from the presentation. If there are any questions.
You mustn't share my meeting, please. You must finish your presentation.
I'm sorry,
we protect our jobs, you see. Colleagues, the presentation is there. Clarifications, seeking questions. Okay, I went wrong. Honorable Seke, Honorable Kese, Honorable Masan, Honorable Abraham, Honorable Stock. There are people who are like me here in this country. In every meeting where I am, I speak. So the chair must know. You need to comment. I'm one of those locals. That's it.
Thank you again for your presentation. I'm not going to attempt to say your name. if you could just answer me on the payments, the 23 rand, 51 rand, is this off the beneficiary's account, or is it directly also like the 1 rand paid from Papa? And I don't know if this question belongs here, but if you know, you can. I'm asking because we had a situation apparently last week where people went to go and get their money, and then the money was not there. So, and it had, of course, the consequence of that we can discuss with the department. Not with you. I just want to ask from a process perspective, what could have been, would you know what could have been the held-up or the problem that has caused something like that to happen, where people needed to come 2 days again and then the money was only in their account? And what the cost would be then and incurred by SASSA because of such a mistake?
Thank you. Good day. Thank you for your presentation.
Okay,
Hi.
This is the first word to call it.
I suppose that means protection or protect trees, right?
Yeah. You must understand, since we're in the Tswana area of Rampante.
Yeah. I speak all languages,
Chair. I assume you speak all languages.
I just need to find out. I'm still a bit confused with the issue of. Okay, my colleague has asked where the money goes, the 51 rand charges and all of that. But my question there is, what is the factor of determination in terms of coming to making decisions in respect of these charges? What are the factors behind these different charges? Like 51 rand where Amoko go and queue and 51 rand is paid there. And you mentioned something that when money is not withdrawn, if I understood you correctly, it goes back to, now I need to find out, does it go back to SASSA's account, does it go back to bank serve? And what happens thereafter? Is there a process where someone, for whatever reason, let's say for sickness, they could not go and withdraw? Let's say it's a grandmother who uses the cash point system, and for whatever reason, they could not go to get their money that month. Are there any back payments? What happens in such situations? And the issue of the, then I don't know if you are in a position to answer this question for me, but I see now in this page 156 of the SASSA report that I've just read now that SASSA made an advancement payment to SAPO, right? Where SAPO needs to pay that money, 10% of the money for the period of how many years? I don't know, yeah, until they have paid it in full. Does that have any influence on these charges? The 51 rand and the 23 rand, is that calculated in the repayment, or could there be an agreement of saying we will not pay back that money because of the advancement? Just, you know, my ignorance on that part, because I do not know where this money goes to, the 51 rand, but the my colleague has asked that, so I will hear from there. So should this money, the 51 rand, 23 rand and all that, go to SAPO, right? Paid by SASSA, does in any way influence this advance payment that SASSA has made to SAPO? I don't know if my question is understood, but I hope it is. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I think my role passes.
Thank you, Chair. You might need to protect the AG if my question is not supposed to be directed for
you. No, I remember, feel free to ask your question. Don't take
okay.
me.
But it might not be.
I don't want you to leave here and say, had the chair not spoken like that, I would have asked this question.
Mm.
Ask any question.
But it might not be for them, so I should let me know if it's not for them. Are we able to get the bank charges that CPX was charging so that we can compare the savings? And then also my second question is,
since SASA sometimes pays late, pays early, etc., and I see they have access to transact with the different DSC regional social assistance accounts, are we perhaps, like in the diagram, like on page 6, can we perhaps get who exactly has access to make those transactions? Is it the CEO, CFO, and perhaps the regional manager from SASA, or is it the CFO, regional manager? Like, who are the signatories on these accounts that have access to this money and this exchange of hands? Thanks.
Next member. No Handler, no Bilanguru, no Mangali, no Mtsawu, all of us
stop.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think also let me add my voice to welcome the presentation from Omphemed.
Omphemed.
It's a very nice name, by the
way.
And then the Honorable Member, this name, when attempted to give a historical perspective on the name. But I think she has done very well. Thank you for the presentation. So I've got one straightforward question which I want to ask in relation to this presentation. We have met with the Department of Social Development on a number of occasions, and then they've brought forward this thing of the fraud that was there, the irregularities within the system. And then there's a move to implement the biometric system which will actually help and deal with all some of these irregularities, which will assist us a lot. And ourselves as a portfolio committee, we're actually in support of that system. And through our engagements with the portfolio committee and the department, we've made it very clear that we're actually looking for it. So I want to know, once that system has been implemented, with all these three different options, the one branch, the national one, and the one one, what is going to be the impact of the implementation of that system? That's the question that I want to ask. Because remember, they will implement the biometric system, but they are still going to pay, and then they will still be liable for payments which will be made to the beneficiaries. So I want to know if that system is actually going to be able to assist us to actually spend lesser as government through the disbursement of social grants to the beneficiaries. So that's my question. Thanks, Chair. Thanks.
I think the general question that comes across to payment, right now? Yeah. Because I spent a lot of my life in Canton D. The first interface was with Tswana. So, if you didn't speak Tswana there, your things didn't go nice. You know what I mean? The young man who leaves the mind goes to the township. If you speak Khoisa, you got in trouble. I remember when they say, Ntuhe, we used to go back there, no, he said, I must come back tomorrow. You were little there, you are being told to go away. I think the general question, AG, is that amongst other questions, is what is the cost benefit of the entire system? Probably the other question that is emerging is it a fair payment? Ethically, those who take this money, in terms of the commerce business, are they supposed to? It's a difficult question which may not need to be answered by you, but the cost benefit is the biggest question.
Yeah.
Okay. Can we throw it back to you?
Thank you, Chair. Especially on the service fee, no, it's not deducted from the beneficiary's grant. It's paid by SAFRA to SAFO.
Okay.
Yes. And then secondly on, so some people went and they could not find their money. It could be that the accounts reflect as those that could possibly have fraudulent activities in them. And if that's the case, then they need to go to post office and they would get their money from post office. The process is not that lengthy. And then number three, the factors that SAFA had to take into account in determining the price, there was a cost analysis that was undertaken, and part of it was also to take into account the infrastructure. So with the CPP, they needed to look at the reach. How many people are in remote areas? Because that's one of the reasons why you would need something like that. So in the villages where there are no shops, no ATMs nearby, that way then they would have to go, and they needed to calculate the cost of having your G4S and facility card going there. So that is the most expensive one. Even under CPS, I think a review was done, and National Treasury came to a figure of around 5,100 as well. So that's the cost. And then over the counter, they needed to look at the cost of infrastructure to improve the facilities of post office. And that's how they came to the 23 rent. And the second rent is how much it costs in terms of the transactions with the auto, to transfer the funds.
Mm.
And that's what they use today. Also, the cost of having the cards, also the beneficiary can get up to 2 cards in a year with regards to those costs. And then the money not drawn, if an individual did not go and draw their money, the money would still remain in their account. As per the agreement with SAPO, it should remain for 3 months,
okay.
and if not drawn, then it should be returned back to the provincial account, but currently that has not been taken place, so the amount would still be in the account. And sometimes you find that maybe the person has passed away and the money is still sitting there. And this has been a challenge even with CPS, where the money would then have to be either returned to SASA, but CPS had a holding account, so they could do that. Unlike the banks, and now SAPO is operating almost similar like a bank, so it's difficult to get the money out of the account simply to back to SASA. So they are working on that one. The money that is returned back is the unsuccessful transactions. So maybe there was something wrong with the account number or something like that. That money is the one that would be returned back to SAPO. And then the 5.1, the advance. So what they do is, on a monthly basis, SAPO would then invoice SAPO to say, I have saved so many people based on the 3 different channels, and this is how much you should be paying me. But of that invoice, then they reduce that invoice by 10%. So they say, okay, you just need to pay me 90% of this invoice. And based on that, for the current financial year, SASA has already paid SAPO back 63 million. And based on the assumptions, looking at the beneficiary pattern, it is estimated that it will take about 4.5 years to 5 years to pay back the money. And that's the method they are using. And then in terms of comparing the previous model to the current model, with CPS it was 16.44, and when we looked at the mix with the current one, with the current system, looking at the one rent with bank sales and then the other three with SAPO, we came to an average of about 14 rent. So that's the current, so currently it does appear to be cost effective. However, there is a review undergoing, and like Rizzo said, I think the portfolio committee should engage with SAPA to just also alert them to say, when we got a deviation, cost effectiveness has always been on the card, so they must always consider it. And then with regards to who has the power to release the funds, that would be the GM Finance at SAPA, and I think also the CFO is involved in the process. So it's not the original executive manager. It's the finance head of it. And then the fraud and the biometrics. Currently the biometric system has been suspended. And how will it reduce? So basically, you would know who, for example, blocked one a beneficiary account and transferred the money into another card and went and withdrew it midnight before the beneficiary could come, because then that person would have had to use their own fingerprints, for example. So basically, we won't now say, let's go investigate. We would know
exactly
who did it. That's how we would help. And then, yeah, so in terms of the cost versus benefit, I think the challenge mainly is reach, in terms of some people are living in remote areas. If it was, if everyone lived in an urban area, then we could all use the bank one, which would cost only one rent. But yeah, the biggest challenge is mainly kind of reach. And yeah, I think I would have addressed all the questions.
Yep. I've got a question. Unless people understand here, as soon as the 8 years delivered efficiently, unless people are tilted, generate another item. AG, as always, our gratitude as community, keep on telling us. We must do something about it. Death certificates will come, that either will come with clear examples. Prosecutor Secretary, do you second?
Inviting the society and the community to a national conference on substance abuse and human rights interventions. It will take place on the 31st and 2nd of November the process now is to submit an application.
Let me just ask you this. AG, you are free. Freedom and declared. You want to say something?
Thank you, Chair. Can we get the questionnaires back before we vacate the
room? Okay.